Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you as a public service by DestinationDelco.com. Just to the east of us, you can find the wonders of historic Delaware County and the Brandywine Valley. And by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car is always worry-free. I'll be back to introduce my guest, Martin Malone and Hissam Obeid, when we continue with Bedford County Speaks.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Long before electronic ignitions, in-dash entertainment, alloy wheels, and moonroofs, our family has provided your family with worry-free transportation and reliable service. One of the great things about living in Bedford County is that all of us still appreciate personal service and the value of a reputation. So many things we want today are measured only by appearance and price. At Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, we strive to do more for you so that we can succeed. In all the years we've been in business, we've never lost sight of the fact that purchasing a car is a big deal for any family, including my own. Your car or truck is your connection to the outside world, whether it be your job, church, or family. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru understands your needs, and that is why we invite you to visit us first. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, for buying a car or truck is always worry-free.
This might be, I think, the farthest I've traveled in my travels with this program. I am in beautiful Center City, Duncansville, Pennsylvania. But we have a very interesting couple of people I want to talk to this morning, so I had no hesitation to travel to Duncansville and meet the folks from P. Joseph Lehman Incorporated. Now, chances are high, unless you're in the construction business or something, you don't even know who these people are. So that's why I was very eager to introduce them. Our first guest is Hissam Obeid, who is a professional engineer with Lehman, and also Martin Malone, who is the client services director. So, gentlemen, I want to say good morning to you, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning, Lloyd.
The guy that said good morning, Lloyd, is Marty, so you'll be able to distinguish them. We'll introduce them as they go along. Marty, let me ask you a question. You, I noticed, are not among the professional engineer staff here. So how did you get into this company? And you've been here a long time. You said 16 or 17 years.
Yeah, 16 or 17.
Do you have a background in this?
I do now. Before I didn't, Lloyd. I was in the restaurant business, running restaurants all over the Commonwealth. Prior to that, I taught English as a foreign language in Japan and, prior to that, in university.
I should have said Ohio Gozaimasu.
Ohio Gozaimasu.
I learned that when I was in Sasebo.
That was perfect, by the way.
Or as they say in Sasebo, it was Ohio Gozaimasu, y'all, because it was south. And I'm afraid that is the total extent of my Japanese language knowledge. But
dozo yoroshiku onegaishimasu.
Oh, konnichiwa. Where does Marty Malone, or how does Marty Malone arrive in Japan to teach English?
Yeah, so as an undergrad at Penn State, foreign policy major, I wanted to go back to Japan, Lloyd, and had been there in high school for a while, and found an opportunity through the Mambusho, which is the Japanese Ministry of Education, and applied for it. In fact, at the World Trade Center, I had my interview and was selected out of one of about 500 from this country that moved there to teach English as a foreign language.
Are you a native of this area originally?
Yes, I'm from Hollidaysburg.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're nearby. You haven't gone far after you've gone 13,000 miles around.
I came home.
Right. And Hissam, you have been here a long time too. 15 years, you say, with the firm?
I've been with the firm for 15 years. Right. Before that, I worked 6 years with another firm, engineering firm. Before that, I worked 4 years with the New York State DOT in Syracuse, New York. And before that, I was at the University of Pittsburgh studying civil engineering.
So that's an interesting. You both kind of made the great circle route back into the Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania area. So you're a native of New York or Pennsylvania?
Actually, no. I'm originally from Syria. I came here 30-some years ago. Okay. I had some relatives here in Hollidaysburg. And so I came to the U.S. I studied English language at the University of Pittsburgh.
I see.
And then I went to Juniata College. Actually, I did a couple years of pre-engineering before going back to the University of Pittsburgh to finish my civil engineering degree.
Are you a mechanical engineer?
I'm structural.
Structural, okay. Well, this is why I wanted to talk with you guys, because I find this whole field very, very fascinating. Marty, give us an idea of what a civil engineering firm does. I mean, how does it impact our life as like regular civilians out here? As we just drove over many highways to get here. What's a civil engineering firm do for us?
I think, you know, Lloyd, the easy answer to that is they shape the world we live in. And they develop, maintain, adapt infrastructure that we use every day that we don't think about. The roads, the bridges, the water, the wastewater systems, the flood control projects, often with very little money to pay for it. So creativity on the engineer's part is a big deal.
I read a fascinating book a few years ago about the civil engineers of Pompeii, and they said in the Roman times they actually had civil engineers that designed all those aqueducts and so forth. So it's an old profession.
And the roads too. My wife and I were just in Pompeii, and
but of course you were. I bring up Pompeii, and Marty says yes. We were just down there the other day.
it wasn't that nonchalant. It was actually our honeymoon.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So when I say just, maybe
that's
2 years ago.
Okay, that's good.
So and the roads, they still use them.
They're amazing.
Yeah,
how were they made?
Stone. Stone and elevated for the waste to go down when they would throw the wastewater out. And the carts would ride on these elevated surfaces so they would stay out of the wastewater. They really put some thought into that.
Well, Sam, that's an interesting engineering question. How did somebody in the years that began with B.C., come up with calculations without the benefit of computers, slide rules, and the like? I mean, this is really an extraordinary story, isn't it?
It is. I think back then, I don't know how much calculations they did, but it seems like using like stones and the arching effect maybe helped tremendously back then. And it is wonderful how all these things we can still see them today standing and being used, actually.
We're speaking to Hossam Obaid and Marty Malone of the P. Joseph Lehman Company, which is a civil engineering firm. And we're learning a little bit about how this whole profession affects us. And the discussion of Pompeii actually is very relevant, because if you could design a road that long ago, a couple thousand years ago, and make it work, and as you said, Marty, they're still driving on it with mechanized vehicles. Mm-hmm. That's quite a testament to some engineering, would you not say, or something?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I
definitely.
Mean, I wish PennDOT could build a road like that.
Well, they have been. PennDOT has improved tremendously, in my opinion, especially in the past 10, 15 years. They have really served the public. They paid a lot more attention to the public than they have before. The cost of projects have been going up, and I think good reason for that is because PennDOT's been actually holding public meetings and asking the public's opinions and trying to help the public better, especially during construction.
Yeah. Marty, you mentioned something a second ago which I had quite forgotten about, and that was the subject of wastewater. Civil engineers get directly involved in that, and boy, there's something nobody thinks about. I mean, they just want that to literally go away. And yet you don't hear it today anymore about problems. I know when I was in Japan, they threw it right in the ditch. It's called the Binjo Ditch.
Yeah, they still do. In some places, rural places.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's still a pretty big deal, yet it's kind of in the shadows. No one ever hears about it. But that technology must have grown as well.
I think like worldwide it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. I know that I read an article not long ago that I think Haiti just got its first wastewater treatment facility. And they don't have the underground piping to pipe the waste to it, so they transport it by truck rather than just dumping it in the ocean, I guess. So it is a big deal worldwide.
So wastewater transfer of energy is another. I mean, civil engineers are involved in towers, I guess, or power lines, things of that nature.
Sure.
Making sure they don't fall down.
Sure.
What would you say, Hassam, is the most important thing you do in terms of designing all this stuff?
The most important thing, I think, is to ensure the safety of the public. Anything we build or design, I just make sure it will not affect the safety of the public.
Right.
I think that's the most important thing I would probably say I pay attention to.
I know in the public media, it got to be a very big deal a couple of years ago about bridges, the bridge infrastructure across the United States. Anybody want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think that is something that's in the spotlight right now. I mean, we're lucky enough now to have the chairman of the Transportation Committee from Congress in our backyard.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a focus on that. I know from PennDOT, there's a focus on upgrading, maintaining, improving bridge structures throughout the Commonwealth. And, you know, the interesting thing about our business is we get involved in all sorts of bridge design and bridge rehabilitation, from, you know, big bridges on the Pennsylvania Turnpike system,
right,
to small township bridges, to rehabilitating historic covered bridges, which we've probably done more than any other firm in the country that we know of.
We're going to talk about the covered bridges in
good,
a few minutes, because I saw these pictures in the Bedford County Courthouse, and they're really very interesting. So,
well,
Sam, I want to ask you more of a technical question, if I might. How much, you said that the Romans didn't use a lot of calculations, I understand that, but we certainly do today. So are there computer models for all this stuff now? So when you go and build a bridge or put up a tower or build a building, is there stuff already done that you can go in there and kind of look at a template, something like that?
Yes. PennDOT has improved, came up with many standards throughout the past 50 years. There are standards for just about everything, every detail out there that you see. Some of the smaller structures, actually, there is a program that you can run, and it'll design the entire structure. If it's a simple single-span structure, it'll do it. For a little more complex structures, you do have to do a lot of calculations, but there are programs out there that can design just every part of the structure. It became so systematic that a lot of times we kind of go through. I mean, getting the approvals, getting the environmental approvals becoming more complicated than designing the structure itself, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, and when we come back, we're going to cover that. And I'm going to ask the age-old question, why does it take so long? Everybody wants to know that. Our guests today are Hassam Obaid, a professional engineer from P. Joseph Lehman, and Martin T. Malone, client services director of the firm. And when we come back, we're going to ask that very important question as Bedford County Speaks continues.
DestinationDelco.com, a new way to experience Delaware County. From Philly to the Brandywine, we have the Crossroads, Riverside, Main Streets, Main Line, and the Brandywine. Five different ways to experience Delaware County. Check us out at DestinationDelco.com. Be sure to listen to Bedford County Speaks, brought to you by DestinationDelco.com. Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., just before Rush, on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
This is District Attorney Bill Higgins, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
We have returned. We are in beautiful Duncansville on a sunny summer day with Marty Malone and Hassam Obaid of the P. Joseph Lehman Company, which is a civil engineering firm. But first, we want to ask the question we posed, why does it take so long? So there's a number of steps that I'm told. And Marty, what is step one if I want to put a bridge across a creek in a township?
Funding is the first step. Getting it programmed, getting the if a municipality, if a township wants to replace or rehabilitate a bridge, Lloyd, they need to find funding for it, unless they want to pay for it out of their general fund. And to do that, they need to compete with every other bridge in the Commonwealth. And in our area, Southern Allegheny's Regional Planning and Development Commission, which covers so many counties, they look at each of these requests for funding and they prioritize these with PennDOT's input. And it's dependent upon the condition of the bridge and how much it's used, if it accepts and carries emergency vehicles, school buses, that sort of thing. So it has to find its way on what's called the 12-year program. And the first 4 years of that are the Transportation Improvement Program, which is the federal component of that, to achieve or to realize any funding for that project. And if it's of a certain condition, Lloyd, it can get up to 95% funding for the project. So really, that's the first step. And that process, Lloyd, can take years to get a project. We have municipalities
we've
in Bedford.
We've always read about that TIP program in the paper. Now I know what it means.
Yeah.
So it's Transportation Infrastructure Program?
Well, the TIP, which is this, or the STIP, which is the first 4 years, is part of the overall TIP.
I love the government.
12-year program.
Got it.
So there are 3 4-year sections to the 12-year program.
I see.
And, you know, we have municipalities, even in Bedford County, who have been vying for a slot where design and construction is funded on the TIP for years. Because they're competing against everybody else. And, you know, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing. But a lot of times it's about condition of the bridge, if it's in danger of imminent failure, that sort of thing. So funding is absolutely the first step. Then, you know, PennDOT will require the municipality to go through what they call a qualifications-based selection for a consulting engineer, such as ourselves. And they base that selection on qualifications. They follow the state role or mandate that price does not come into it when you're selecting an engineer for a project like that.
Is that so?
Once the engineer, for example, if we're selected for that, then we enter into contract with, you know, the Department of Transportation to do the project. And then there's an entire process that I'm sure Hussam could touch on as to why it takes so long to get a bridge from design to construction.
Well, the process is lengthy because we are trying to protect the environment while we are building the bridge. We're trying to solicit the people's opinion and their input into the project to try to build something that they will like at the end. And we're in the process, we're trying to get various agencies' approvals. We're trying to make sure the end product satisfies all requirements and all the issues that we find during our research. I mean, we start any project with field survey, where we send our surveyor out and he picks up all the elevations for the stream, for the road, for the houses around or any businesses, for the utilities or any historic features. Then we also do background check on the environmental aspects of the project, whether it's wetland or like I mentioned, historic features, any endangered species or anything like that. We do all that survey and all that research, and then we sit down and think about what a proposed structure would look like. And we come up with a preliminary concept for the structure that we are designing, and then we take that preliminary concept and we pass it along to different agencies, to the owner, to PennDOT, to some of the locals, make sure it serves, for example, the fire department, you know, and then we come up with a way how we're going to construct that bridge while maintaining all the services for the surrounding area, which, like I mentioned, the police department or the fire department. And then after all the local agencies like PennDOT or the owner or the county reviews and they're all satisfied with our concept, if there's something that they're not satisfied with, we go ahead and revise it and we come up with a preliminary concept. We take that concept and we present it to the public in a public meeting and we advertise for that meeting and the public, some show up to those meetings and they voice their concern, whether it's a detour that we are doing or half with construction. Somebody might have his business. If we do a detour, that might impact his business. So we try to figure out a way to help him with his business and whether it is temporary relocation. Sometimes we do half-width construction. We've done that in the past. We do half-width construction to allow traffic to keep flowing through the project area so that businesses wouldn't be impacted. So public meetings are important for the public to voice their concerns and get what they want during construction.
Yeah, this is interesting because I've been to several of those PennDOT meetings as a civilian. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things come up in those meetings you wouldn't expect, such as historic preservation. Might have an old house near this project. Well, when you start those jackhammers, the old house is going to fall down, things like that, you know. And the other thing that amazes me is you guys can maintain traffic over the old bridge while you're building the new bridge. I watched them do that on the Pennsylvania Turnpike when they built the bridge over the Susquehanna. I was going west a lot in business, and I would go through there every 2 weeks and watch literally that bridge go up, the new one. And now you don't even know there was an old bridge. I mean, it was really quite an extraordinary accomplishment. So you do this every day, of course. But let me ask you something else, Marty. Not all bridges are built by PennDOT. The counties have bridges too, right?
They do.
So is the funding issue the same with them?
Well, it depends, and not to get bogged down in all the details, Lloyd, but certain counties are eligible for special pots of money depending on where they fall with unemployment rates, that sort of thing. And Bedford's been very lucky with being eligible for, I think it's Act 26 funding, which covers a lot of the cost associated with the county-owned bridges. Now, that's for replacement rehabilitation. They've also been very aggressive in pursuing federal grants for their covered bridges, for example. And I think people don't realize how lucky they are to have a board of commissioners that really want to preserve and enhance and promote the covered bridges, because they get it. I mean, they get that there's a link to tourism there and historic preservation, of course.
I've never seen a county in Pennsylvania with as many covered bridges as this one has. Maybe there are some, but
there are other counties. Yeah, Lancaster County has quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. But Bedford County has taken a systematic approach, and we've been blessed to be there from day one.
Yeah.
Helping them along with this in rehabilitating and maintaining all of those covered bridges. And there's special pots of funding, although it's getting very difficult to get now, especially with the new transportation bill. I think some of that funding has gone away.
Our fascinating guests are Marty Malone, who has been telling us about the covered bridges, and of course, Hussam Obaid, who is one of the professional engineers. Hussam, how many PEs do you have here in this firm?
I would say we have about 15 PEs, I think, in this firm.
And you have a number of locations, right? You're not just in
We have three locations. Here. We have, of course, an office in Bedford, right in Bedford. We just opened an office in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, of course, we've been in this office since 69
was when the firm was founded, yeah.
We are speaking with Hussam Obaid and Marty Malone of the P. Joseph Lehman Engineering Firm. Is there a Joe Lehman around?
There is. His father started it. P. Joseph Lehman Sr. started the firm in 1969. Shortly thereafter, we became the county engineer for Bedford, and we've been there shy of 50 years now.
Oh, really?
And working alongside of different boards of commissioners. And now P. Joseph Lehman Jr. is our president.
I have to ask you this question before we leave this radio program today, because I think it's an extraordinary accomplishment. I want to talk about the work you did on the covered bridges themselves. This must have been one hell of a project. I understand there was reinforcement in some of them. Some of them were completely redone. Some of them were just restored out of the original structure, the bird trusses and things of that nature. What brought that on? Who started all that? Because they must have been falling down, and you guys came along and made them new again.
You know, years ago, we're going back to before Pompeii, many years ago, Pennsylvania had hundreds and hundreds of covered bridges.
Right.
And through floods, fires, just deterioration, many of them have gone away. And there are some organizations around, such as the Theodore Burr Covered Bridge Society, who promote the rehabilitation and maintenance of these covered bridges. But they're competing in a lot of ways, Lloyd, with conventional highway bridges for that same pot of money. Mm. And if you know, vehicular traffic doesn't use them, a lot of times they're not eligible for that. Case in point, we finished the longest covered bridge left in Pennsylvania. Hmm. It was the Academia Pomeroy Covered Bridge, which was not eligible for traditional funding. So it took us literally 10 years to work with that client in getting the funding to rehabilitate it. And we stuck with them through thick and thin and through different boards.
That's a lot of no's.
It was really an experience. It was a great experience. But with their vision, and they stuck with it and they rehabilitated it. And now we just finished the second, or the longest, I think, town trust covered bridge left in Pennsylvania, which is down in Franklin County. In
Antrim Township.
Antrim Township, yeah. We just finished the rehabilitation on that. And all of these covered bridges we're doing to the Secretary of the Interior standards guidelines for rehabilitation of historic places. Some of them we're putting steel I-beams under so that they'll accept vehicular traffic.
Well, I want to tell you, if you've not been to the courthouse lately, you've got to go on the first and second floor and see the photographs that have been encased in what it looks like plexiglass or something on the walls, on the inside walls of the courthouse offices, where Lehman has put up these magnificent photographs of every single one of the Bedford bridges. And it's really something worth going to the courthouse. And bring your children, because it is really interesting to see how those people built bridges back then. And they stand to this day, and with or without steel reinforcement, they carry a lot of weight. And I have been over the ones you've reinforced, and yet they're still little narrow bridges where it's just enough to clear a hay wagon, which, by the way, I understand the height of the bridge was determined by that factor, were hay wagons. Is that so? I heard that.
I don't know. There are a lot of...
That's a little mythology, maybe?
Yeah, there are a lot of things.
It was a good urban legend. I mean,
one of the big questions, Lloyd, is why were they covered? You know, and there are different schools of thought on that.
Oh, I thought they did that to protect the deck.
Well, that's one of the thoughts there. That's probably the most prevalent thought that's out there.
You mean you really don't know? Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery to some degree.
All right.
One time I was inspecting a bridge, and somebody was visiting a bridge in Bedford County, and he asked me, why are they covered? He said, I heard they covered it because their horses wouldn't be afraid to get in. Otherwise, I wasn't.
That's a good one, too. I've seen photographs of them hauling snow onto the bridge during the wintertime so the sleds could go over the bridge.
Really?
Yeah, because they wouldn't slide over the boards. Yeah. So they had to import snow from outside to put it on the bridge so they could get across when it was snowy.
Oh, wow.
If you think about it, I mean, most of the trusses for the cover bridges are above the deck. So by putting the trusses up, it only takes a small little effort to cover them and protect them from snow and protect everything. I think that's the main
reason
for it.
Well, gentlemen, you've been a treat. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Hissam Obaid of the PE here of the firm of Joseph Lehman, and also Marty Malone, Client Services Director. You've been tremendous and a good sport to do this.
Well, we enjoyed it.
Thank you.
When I first talked to Marty about it, his face got all contorted and said, well, wow, radio show, why are we going to do that? And did I miss anything? Did we miss anything?
Just that I'm dressed really well for this radio show.
Well, good. I always do. I try.
My wife says I have a good face for radio.
Okay, Gil. Well, thanks again. I really, really appreciate your having us. And if you want to learn more about Joseph Lehman, you can go to their site, which is called Lehman Engineers. That's LEHMAN.com. Bedford County Speaks was brought to you today by DestinationDelco.com and by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, where buying a car is always worry-free. If you'd like to hear more of the program again, just visit BedfordCountySpeaks.com. I look forward to visiting you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, have a great weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.